Welcome to Imagining the Past, the 2026 season. I'm Greg Johnston. HNSA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognises their continuing connection to the land, water and community. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. In this series of podcasts, we'll be hearing from the winners of the ARA Historical Novel Prize 2025, both adult and CYA categories. But we'll also be hearing from some other authors of historical fiction. The ARA Historical Novel Prize is now the richest genre-based literary award in Australasia, a staggering $155,000 divided between the adult and CYA categories and the Reader's Choice Award. The Historical Novel Society Australasia promotes the reading and writing and publishing of historical fiction through our biennial conferences and online programs. Imagining the Past is commercial free. HNSA is a volunteer-run, not-for-profit organisation and can only continue to produce the podcast with your support. Please consider making a tax-deductible donation through our secure website. All contributions, great or small, are greatly appreciated. In July, Kate Forsyth launched her new novel, The Changeling, at the Foxhole Bar in Sydney's Rocks area. As Kate points out, it was a rainy night, like the Scottish setting of The Changeling, and we settled in for a cosy Kate Forsyth story.
Thank you all so much for coming along tonight on this wild and wintry evening. Doesn't it feel like we're in Scotland? That I've transported you 17,000 kilometres to the place of my book, and I'm about to take you back in time as well. Now, tonight is a very special night for me, and that's why I really wanted to celebrate it. And to explain why it is such a special time for me, I need to tell you the story of my life. So I hope you all have a drink. Settle back, enjoy. Now, those of you who have known me for a long time, which is many of you, know that I have always wanted to be a writer. I have never wanted to do anything else in my life. I first began writing stories as soon as I could hold a pencil, and I wrote my first novel when I was 7.5 years old. To prove it, I brought it along tonight to show you. I've got a little box of treasures here. This is it. It is 27 pages long, but I wrote it as much like a book as I could, and I'm going to open it. Can you see it's got a title page? This is my favourite bit. This book is called Runaway, and it says, written by Katie Humphrey, illustrated by Katie Humphrey, published, Vonnet Book Services, misspelled, published, London, New York and Sydney. So when I was only 7 years old, I knew exactly what I wanted to be, which was an internationally best-selling author. My next book, I was slightly better at illustrating. It's called Far, Far Away, and it's about a girl. I wrote that when I was 8. It's about a girl whose family inherits a castle in Scotland, but her family are too poor to keep the castle, so she has to find the lost treasure of Killarney Castle to save the day. This was like my life dream, because I grew up on the stories of my own family, which, according to my great aunt, once owned a castle in Scotland, which was cruelly wrested away from us. And a great deal of my daydreams when I was a little girl was about how I was going to get that castle back. I actually went one year to Ellandonan, which is the so-called Mackenzie Castle, which they lost in about the 9th century. So long, long, long ago. And I'm glad I didn't inherit it. It's cold and damp and all the rooms are tiny and very stony. But still, the romance lives on, doesn't it? So by the time I was 16, I had written probably 6 or 7 novels, all longhand in exercise books. And my illustrations gradually got a little better. This is the one that I wrote when I was 16, upside down. It's called Heart Moon Rising. And this is the first time I tried to get published. I sent this off in a package to Angus and Robertson Publishers, which for anyone here who's in the publishing industry just shows how long ago that was. I remember the feeling that I had when I pushed it through the slot in the red pillar box. I thought, this is the beginning of my real life. It'll be published. I'll be an international publishing sensation. I'll be the youngest person ever to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. This is the beginning of my life. Unfortunately, it was not going to be that easy for me, but they sent me the nicest, kindest rejection letter ever, which I still have. It said, "Dear Katie, thank you so much for sending us your manuscript. I'm afraid that we are unable to publish it, but you clearly have talent. Keep on writing and I'm sure you'll be published one day." So once I stopped weeping and hauled myself out of the depths of despair, I took that advice. I kept on writing. I kept on writing and I kept on trying to be published. I went to university and did a Bachelor of Arts in Literature, and I began to get a few things published here and there. And when I finished that degree, I worked as a journalist, kept on writing, kept on trying to be published. But by the time I reached my 25th birthday, I was once again in the depths of despair. I mean, Keats died when he was 27. I only had like 2 more years to be on the same level as Keats. Anyway, thank you so much, James. On my 25th birthday, I got to admit I was having a few little tears. And my boyfriend of the time came and sat next to me and gave me a bit of a pat and said, "Oh, darling, this writing thing of yours, you seem really serious about it." "The most important thing to me in my life." "Oh, except for you, darling," was my answer. So then he said to me, "Well, it's not like you're earning that good money as a journalist anyway. Why don't you quit full-time work, freelance, and have a really red-hot go at trying to make this writing dream of yours come true?" So I kind of sat up and dashed the tears off my life. "Really?" And he said, "Yeah. But I'll tell you what, I'll give you 5 years. And if you can't be published within 5 years, you're going to have to go and get a proper job." But I was 25 years old. 5 years seemed like such a long time. But can I tell you, it went past like that. Yeah. I went back to university. I did a Master of Arts in Writing. I worked on a very serious, quite dreary book as my master's thesis, because that's what I thought people wanted. I was having to read all this lit grit and, you know, metafictive books. So all I was reading were big fat fantasy books, obviously. And one day, my boyfriend of the time said to me, quite crankily, because I wasn't coming to bed, I was staying up and reading books. He said, "All you ever do is read those fantasy books. Why don't you write one?" I went, "Okay, I will." And I literally sat down the next day and began to write. I drew upon a dream that I'd had when I was 16 years old about an old wood witch who finds an abandoned baby. And the old wood witch can speak with animals and has magical powers, but witchcraft has been outlawed and is dangerous. And as I began to write, I could feel electricity coursing through my body. It was like my fingertips were sparkling with joy. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote. And by the end of my university holidays, I'd written about 50 or 60,000 words. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is the best thing I've ever written. I'm going to try and get it published. And so I looked up all the literary agents in Australia and I put them in order of preference. And then I sent off my manuscript, which was actually typed and printed this time, not handwritten, not hand illustrated, off to Gabby Nair at Hickson and Associates. Now, everyone told you that agents take ages to come back. Everyone says you've got to be patient. Patience is not my strength. But can I tell you that she rang me the very next day and she said, Kate, I loved it. I think that I can publish it. Can you send me the complete manuscript? And I had to confess that I'd sent her everything that I'd written. So then she said to me, well, how soon can you have a finished manuscript to me? Now, in my head, one, you've got to imagine that I was actually levitating off the ground with joy and excitement. Two, in my head, I'm going, well, I'm a full-time university student and has to deliver her thesis in the next couple of months. I'm working 3 days a week as a freelance journalist, and sometimes it's like I'm working 8 days a week as a freelance journalist, and, oh, I'm getting married in a couple of months. But to Gabby, I said, oh, I've got nothing on. No problem. I'll get the book written and I'll get it to you very fast. So that was April 1996. And I did nothing at all but write and write. And at the end of the month, I delivered her a complete manuscript. She took it out to various different publishers. We ended up having an international bidding war for it. And on the 1st of June 1996, I signed a 3-book contract in Australia, the US, Russia, Germany, and anyway, and 2 days later, I turned 30. I made that 5-year deadline by 2 days. This is beautiful Gabby here. We found my book in the slush pile. That book is called Dragon Claw. It changed my life. I went from being an impoverished university student to being an internationally published author. And the rest of my life was completely transformed because of it. So thank you, Gabby. That's why you're here tonight. I have, you know, and anyone who's been paying attention would know that I signed that book contract 30 years ago. And that's why you're all here tonight, to celebrate that moment that changed my life, where all my dreams came true. In that time, I've written many books, collections of poetry, collections of essays, children's books, books for adults. I've even got a calendar, merch. Anyway, when it came time to write my next book, couple of years ago, I knew that it would be coming out around the anniversary of me signing that first book contract of mine, that moment which changed my life and made me who I am today. And so I wanted to write a book that would in some way circle back around to that very first published book of mine. Dragon Claw drew upon the Scottish folk tales and Scottish history that I had been told by my grandmother and my great aunts, and which had enthralled me when I was a young teenager, and which I had drawn upon many times in my fiction before. And so I knew I had to write a book that was going to be drawing upon Scottish folklore and Scottish history, but I could not have imagined the astonishing journey of discovery that it took me on. The Changeling draws upon one of my favorite little-known fairy tales, which is about a girl called Katie, just like me, and she sets out on a perilous journey to save her sister, who has been cursed, and along the way just happens to save the Laird son as well. She's brave and she's clever. Now, I decided to set my story in the time of Mary, Queen of Scots, and the very first witch hunts, because I had been so enthralled by Mary, Queen of Scots when I was a young woman. And her story is one of tragedy, drama, and romance, all the stuff that I love. And then along the way, I discovered the untold story of the first witch who was burnt to death in Scotland, the first named witch, who, strangely enough, her name was also Kate or Katie. And so that's the story behind The Changeling. Now, I know the question that is burning in all of your hearts and that you've been waiting for me to answer. And that question is, was the kind young man who gave me 5 years to get a book published the same person I was marrying? Yes, reader, I married him. And he's here tonight, my beautiful husband, Greg, who's standing over there. I cannot tell you what a great gift that he gave me, because it was the gift of time, It was the gift of relieving me of the anxiety of how I was going to make enough money to feed myself and write. But it was much more than that. It was the first time anyone had ever given me the true gift of faith. He believed that I would be able to do it. And because he believed in me, I was able to believe in myself. And so for all of you here in the room tonight, I hope that there is someone who loves you enough to have that faith in you and to give you the gift of it. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm getting a bit teary. Thank you. Now, apart from my beautiful husband, I also have many other people to thank, including, of course, my beautiful children. It is not easy to have a mother whose head is always in the clouds and whose nose is always in a book. It has some advantages. They come in and go, "Oh, Mum, I want to go out tonight." And I go, "Okay, honey." And they'd say, "I haven't got any money." "Oh, my wallet's over there, honey. Is there any curfew, Mum?" "What? No, no." So it wasn't all bad, and we did have many adventures, but still I just wanted to thank them. They're all here tonight. They're so beautiful and I'm so proud of them all. I can't believe how brilliantly they're living their lives. So thank you, darlings. Now the other person who I really, really wanted to thank is also lurking here in a dark corner, and that's my publisher, Meredith, who's right here. Meredith knew me when I was a starry-eyed young poet. She asked me to my very first literary festival when I had to come from the hospital, having just given birth, to that enormous child lurching at the back there. She's published so many books with me, and I trust her with everything. If Meredith says something to me, I go, how can I fix this so that Meredith thinks it's going to be good? She's the queen of publishing. I'm unbelievably blessed to have her. And I just wanted to, you know, just say thank you to you so much. Thank you, Meredith. My other beautiful agent, Tara, is not here tonight, but I know that she wishes to be here. And I know that both Gabby and Meredith would tell her how much she was missed and how much I love her and how grateful I am to her. I also wanted to thank, this is an unusual thank you, but here in the crowd is a lovely woman called Lyndall Garland, who's sitting over there. This is Lyndall. When you read The Changeling, you will meet a character named Mistress Garland. And that is because Lyndall Garland paid an extraordinary large amount of money to have naming rights in my book in order to support the Women's Club and the Rose Scott Women's Literary Festival, both of which are places very close to my own heart, the institutions which have supported women writers in this country for more than 100 years now. So, Lyndall, thank you so much for being here tonight, and thank you so much. Mistress Garland became one of my favourite characters in the book, and I hope that she honours you properly. Thank you, Lyndall. Now, I also need to thank the Foxhole for hosting me here tonight and for making that rather fabulous cocktail in my honour. It's called the Fairy Queen. It glitters with gold. Drink it. Enjoy. But the last people I need to thank tonight are all of you. Here tonight are my soul sisters, my fellow writers, my readers, the people who have support me and share and amplify me and my story on social media, people who have been behind me, who've been following my journey with this book for 2-3 years, people who love books and are passionate about human storytelling. Now, I can't tell you how important that is in our world and how bravely we need to guard it. So I just want to thank you all so much for being here tonight and for helping me celebrate what is obviously a very deeply moving time for me. So all of you, go forth, drink cocktails, enjoy.
Thank you for listening to Imagining the Past, the 2026 season. Please remember to explore our extensive podcast archive where you'll find a wealth of interviews. I'm Greg Johnston. Keep reading, keep listening. It's so good to have your company imagining the past.